Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to episode number 87 of the REI Diamond Show with Jason Ballin on funding flips in the 2017 hot real estate market. Dan Breslin here, REI Diamond Show host. Today, Jason and I discuss how to find and fund flips in today's hot real estate market. We talk about funding for established and experienced investors, as well as how to get started as a flipper when you have access to no cash or maybe even bad credit, like was my situation when I got started. Jason is the co-founder of Hard Money Bankers, a lender in the Philadelphia and Baltimore, D.C. markets, where I also operate, and Jason is also a real estate investor. So let's jump right in, shall we? All right, welcome to the show, Mr. Jason Ballin.
Thanks, Dan. Glad to be here.
For the listeners that don't know who you are, Hard Money Bankers may not be following you with all of your videos and educational things that you've done along the years. Can you tell people how you got started in real estate, what you kind of did up to this point, maybe what your business is comprised of today?
Yeah, absolutely. So a few years after I graduated college, which was early 2000s, working as like a mortgage broker. Yeah, I guess you can call that being in the finance industry. I don't know if it's I don't know if that's a proper term or not.
Nice.
But owned a few rentals, bought a few flips, things like that. But when I was working as a mortgage broker, I'll never forget the day that I had a loan and I brought it to the owner of the company, my boss at the time. And I was like, you know, this deal has there's a lot of collateral on this deal. It's strong, but the guy's credit's not letting them, you know, get qualified for programs, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, oh, let me take a look at that. He's like, you know what? Why don't we just be the lender on that deal and we'll fund that deal? You know, it wasn't bankable at the time, but he put up his own money and he ended up just being the bank. He just ended up being the lender. And, you know, I was like, great, you know, got a commission on it, no big deal. A few days later, I went back to him and I wanted to learn a little bit more. And he was like, yeah, you know, we can just, you know, you don't have to be a bank to be the bank. He had some money, he had some private capital lined up, and, you know, he was doing private lending, you know, aka hard money lending, I guess you can call it, back then. So ever since that day, I was really intrigued with the lending side of real estate investing business. And about 11 years ago, my business partner, Chris Haddon, and I started our company, Hard Money Bankers. We went out, we had a little bit of our own money, but we primarily had to go out, raise a bunch of money, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. 11 years later, we have about $40 million deployed on the streets between the D.C., Baltimore markets and the Philadelphia markets.
Cool. So Hard Money Bankers is doing 11 years. If I'm doing the math quickly, we're in 2017. You're starting in 2006. That had to be one hell of a time to start lending money. Am I right, Jason?
Yeah, that'd be one hell of a time. You're absolutely right. And you don't know what you don't know when you start, right? So it was, you know, the housing market just crashed. I was still in my 20s at the time, and I had to go out and try to raise capital. And what I realized, and it's kind of a good lesson learned, is you have a good deal, it is easy to find capital, even in the bad times. And, you know, obviously it took us a long time to create the fund that we have in play now of, you know, a very large fund to go out and deploy cash with. But at the time it was hard to find money, but we always realized after talking to every single one of our investors, hey, we're starting this hard money company, we have access to these good deals, we're making sure they're all well underwritten. You know, we follow the principles of the four C's and things like that. And they're like, yeah, that sounds great, Jason. You know, bring me a deal and I'll let you know, type of thing. And kind of trial and error, we realized over time that as long as we could find good deals, and, you know, to this day, we all look for good deals, right? As long as we can find good deals, the money will follow.
You mentioned the four C's. For anyone listening, want to go through those? Just give a brief explanation of what's meant as the four C's, Jason?
Sure. So the four C's that we really try to live by when we look at a real estate deal. Now, keep in mind that, you know, we're not a bank. We don't have strict underwriting. You know, we're a real hard money lender, a real private lender. You know, it's a common sense type of deal. But what we do try to follow is, you know, the first C being collateral, the hard asset, the property itself. That's obviously the most important. If the numbers don't work and the value is not the property, there's no point. Collateral is the most important. Character is the second C. Second most important, you know, we meet all of our borrowers. I encourage any real estate investor to meet their lenders. It's a relationship type of business. And, you know, there's certainly borrowers out there that they'll do whatever this, you know, on our end, they'll do whatever it takes, even if, you know, they run into some trouble, to make sure they pay off their debt and they do right by it. So character is so important. After that, capacity. Do you have the ability to make monthly payments? Do you have the ability to properly execute on the project and finish construction and flip the house? So capacity is huge. And number four is credit. Credit obviously isn't everything, but it does tell a story about a lot of folks. You know, if you're not paying any of your bills, what makes me think you're going to pay us? So those are the four C's, and those actually go in order of importance when we look at a loan.
Give us a brief example. I know, like, a lot of the hard money out here, back in 2004, 5, and 6, I remember my first loan that I paid 15% interest and 5 points on the first property that I flipped and the second, but I got 100% of the project costs, and, you know, I did have some money in the bank, somewhere in the neighborhood of $10,000 to $20,000 in the bank at the time. I don't think my credit was ever checked during the course of that, and it was a very relationship-driven loan. But can you give us an example of what's commonplace now? Are we having to put some down money into the project? Are we, you know, having to have 650 credit scores? I mean, what is the ideal borrower look like, at least for hard money bankers, Jason?
Yeah, so weird time right now with money. You know, there's a lot of large pools of capital out there that they want to get a good return on their money. They want to deploy capital. We've really stuck to old school underwriting of what we're comfortable with. We've done 1,500 loans, and I'm very confident that we know what we're doing. So we stick to what's worked over the last 11 years. We lend out at around 13% in 3 points, and some areas that's high, some areas that's low. That's the reason we lend money out on that end, is because we want to dictate how much money we make on these projects. And when we charge those that amount, we make the money we want to make, on it. I've lost a lot of good borrowers over the years who are able to get cheaper capital these days, and that's fine. But just like anyone shouldn't do a deal just to do a deal, I'm not doing a loan just to do a loan. I want to make sure properly compensated and make the right amount of money on that. But, you know, an average borrower right now is actually pretty darn qualified. They typically have pretty decent credit. They are buying a property at the right numbers. You know, the market's changing. It's hard to find really good opportunities, but they're still out there. Our borrowers typically bring 10, 20% into the deal. And, you know, for the most part, either they have experience or they come from a different industry. I mean, they may be new, but they come from an industry that they were somewhat successful in. So all in all, they're kind of stand-up individuals, and they have, maybe they don't, even if they don't have experience, they have the ability to be successful in this real estate space.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And I know for me, I came from pretty much should have went bankrupt when the market went down. I went down with the market and stubbornly did not file for bankruptcy, and instead took a few years to kind of like pay off and dig myself out of the hole. And I'm sure I have listeners who, you know, are either on one of two sides of the coin. Either they do have the good credit and they've got 10, 20% or more cash set aside for doing deals and they're, you know, just getting into it, or maybe experienced. Then we also have people who are probably like check to check, or, you know, maybe situations like I was in who are just getting started. And I think, you know, would you agree with me if I kind of say, like, look, if you probably first in this business have to get a feel for what a really good real estate deal is. And if you can get good at doing those real estate deals, you might have to give away a few of them in the form of like joint ventures with people with better credit and some assets to come to the deal, more experience, or maybe give away a few of those deals. And when I say give away, like to wholesale them to somebody else and make $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 assignment fees on a really good deal is definitely possible. But then you can get yourself into a position where maybe you're paying off some of the old credit and debts and things like I had to do and rebuild my character, credit, and capacity and get to a place where I have cash in the bank to borrow money from companies like Hard Money Bankers at this point. I mean, would you agree that that's pretty smart? You know, first things first, you got to start to figure out a good deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a good deal goes a long way. There's a lot of options that you can do. And, you know, real estate's easy, but it's dangerous at the same time if you don't know what you're doing. You can get yourself in trouble by that. So I always encourage new real estate investors to either be in a position that you're hiring somebody to help you, the right person. Obviously, there's a lot of wrong people that you shouldn't be hiring, but there's a lot of right people you should be hiring, or partnering with somebody. And, you know, partnerships, obviously, you know, they're not always as rosy as they potentially look, but, you know, use, you know, one thing that most people have and most people are, you know, it's important is instinct. And you got to use your instinct. You got to use your gut feel. And if you feel comfortable with somebody that they're going to help you and you bring a solid deal to the table, sure, you know, go that route instead of, you know, getting a loan that you're personally guaranteeing. If you truly have a strong deal, you have a lot of options. You have a lot of flexibility, but hopefully you've kind of been around enough people, you know, going to meetup groups, going to RIA groups, going to coaching programs and seminars and things like that. Like, I'm a huge advocate of education, as long as it's the right education, and, you know, create yourself a sphere of people that, you know, you can trust, that can help you with some of these things. And, you know, between, you know, that sphere of influence, I'm sure, you know, there's people that can help you navigate the waters and, you know, turn that deal into some sort of money. It may not be as much as you want, like if you were getting lent the money yourself, but again, you know, there's a lot of opportunities out there, so each one stands on their own.
Absolutely. I remember maybe the first, when I started my career, I did like 3 assignments, and then I remember, I think it was the 4th deal that came through the pipeline, and I had met somebody. I'm not going to mention his name. He prefers to remain anonymous. But I met this gentleman at the Ring meeting, the Real Estate Investor Networking Group, which, you know, 10, 11 years later in 2017, actually Hard Money Bankers is one of our partners in the Philadelphia Ring meeting. And we put on a fantastic event, just like it was 10 years ago when I started, where the room was full of people who were doing deals, who had a cooperative attitude, you know, wanted to help other people out. And I had met this gentleman at that meeting. And I assigned him the 3rd deal I had done. I assigned that deal to him. We assigned a 4th one together. So he was kind of like my partner on the deal in a sense. And I remember it was so funny, Jason. I walk into the meeting and he sees me, and we had already done the 1 deal together, and I had brought a couple more. So I was like this kid. And I remember I had to get a ride to that meeting. Like, I didn't even have a car to show up at the meeting. I get a ride to the meeting and he sees me there, but I was already building a reputation as like this young kid, this 26-year-old kid that could dig up deals somehow. And he approaches me and says, "You got anything cooking?" And I'm like, "No, this guy's trying to sell me this burned down house in Chester." And he turns his head and looks at me, and he's like, I think I got a buyer for that. And, like, you know, a week, 2 weeks later, and like a $17,000 assignment whacked 50-50, the deal that I thought was worthless turned into like $8,500 a piece as a result of, you know, partnering. And then the 5th deal I did with him, this is somebody I met at these networking events. Just like you said, there's so much value there. The 5th deal, I bring that to him. We were buying it for $120,000 or so. And my plan was, hey, we're going to close on this with your money, and we're going to just basically mop and glow the floors, and we're going to turn around and sell it as a handyman special to someone who wants to live here, because condition was good enough to, you can do this in this market that we're in right now in 2017, where you can sell properties as long as they can qualify for a mortgage to someone who's going to live there, and they're going to pay much more money than, say, a buyer like one of our Hard Money Banker clients or one of, you know, me and Diamond Equity.
Yep.
Flip numbers, right? So I remember how difficult it was, Jason. It was like I was going to steer it in a new direction, and he says to me, the partner, I bring him the deal, I take him to the deal, I tell him what we're going to do, and he says, "Well, why don't we just assign the deal?" And I remember I told him, "Well, I don't need you to assign a deal. I can assign a deal myself, but we're going to make more money if we do it this way, where we actually close on it." And he ended up having enough faith where we then became partners on that deal, and we whacked up $40,000 profit at the end of the day. And it was the 5th and 6th deals right behind those 2 other deals that actually that same gentleman was my funding partner on that deal, the deals I mentioned earlier in the episodes here. So showing up for those networking events, doing the work, being a person of character, you know, being on time for the coffee meeting that you're going to meet with some of those other investors, if you know, the newer people or less experienced, or if you're going into a new market and plugging in and starting all over with your contacts. I mean, you know, show up, do the work, get out there and network and navigate your way through all the players. It's definitely all about the relationships.
Yeah, it goes a long way. And it doesn't matter what market we're in, no matter what the conditions are, there's always opportunities. There's always opportunities. You know, if we're in a market like we are in now, it may be more competitive. There's a lot of people in the space, but keep in mind, there's a lot of people in the space. The majority of them don't know what the heck they're doing anyway. So, you know, you being the professional / experienced, you know, that goes a long way. over a lot of newer people or someone who's just trying to come into the space and maybe make a quick buck. So, you know, there's no, or I shouldn't say no, but it's hard. You know, if you're trying to play the get rich quick game, you're gonna, it's a hard thing going. You know, this is a long-term business. You can do it full-time, you can do it part-time, it doesn't matter. But it's a long-term play, and, you know, at the end of the day, there's a lot of opportunities and there's a lot of money to be made.
So I want to take a turn right now, Jason. I know you've been analyzing, you had to have done over 1,000 deals by now, right, where you've looked at comps and you've decided to invest, not invest. So I'm going to step out on a limb that I know is pretty secure and say that you're probably an expert at certain neighborhoods and certain opportunities, and those opportunities and neighborhoods have probably developed over the course of the last 11 years. So I'm interested in kind of like opening a little bit of a line of discussion right now on where is the opportunity in 2017, and that maybe I'm looking for an answer in like price points, maybe I'm looking for an answer in specific neighborhoods and maybe the Baltimore or maybe the Philadelphia area. Maybe there's a certain level of renovation where you're seeing the borrowers kind of win because it's more competitive, as you just said, and there's a lot more people in the space. But I found that in some of the markets that I'm in throughout the country, that means that maybe instead of doing like standard fix and flip property where we change out a kitchen, maybe do a gut, now there's more opportunity for the more experienced investor with capital and the construction resources to like pop the second story, do a ranch that turns into a second story because there's not as much competition in that space. Or in the Atlanta market, we have a lot of more experienced builders and buyers who will pay $500,000, $600,000, $450,000 for a ranch home and then pop the second story on that and spend, I don't know, $350,000 and then sell that property for anywhere from $900,000 to $1.2 million. And there's not as much competition in that space. And they're really easy deals for that person to like step in, take advantage of. They're paying nearly retail price for the properties, but there's just, that's where the opportunity has migrated as that market's heated up. So can you speak to some of those hot areas in the markets and the deal flow that comes across your desk, Jason?
Sure. So I'm a very firm believer of investing in real estate in medium housing price neighborhoods. And the reason it is that's where the majority of the retail buyers are. That's where the majority of things just happen, and at least in the markets that we lend in and that we buy in. I'd like to think it's like that everywhere, but I'm going to just say in the areas that we do business in, we really try to stay in the median housing price neighborhoods. This business, and a lot of people don't realize this sometimes, but it's still institutional and bank driven. And the reason that is when you finish a property, let's say you buy a house, when you renovate it, two things are either going to happen. Either going to sell it to a homeowner who chances are will rely on bank financing, or you're going to go refinance it, and you're going to refinance with a bank. So there's banks involved in both of that stuff. You know, if you ever heard of obviously Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, yeah, and they have their conforming loan limits. That's typically the best pricing for their conventional mortgage model, and that's all kind of based on median housing prices, not the lower stuff, not the higher stuff. Is there opportunities on lower stuff and higher stuff? Absolutely. And there's a huge niche for both of those things. That being said, the majority of the action happens in the median housing neighborhoods. So think about some subdivisions, some cities, some towns inside your general metropolitan area of what's there. For instance, you know, we do a lot of stuff in the Washington, D.C. and Baltimore market, right? That's our core market. And then, you know, we have an office in Philadelphia as well. The two counties locally that have the most action, and it's also because of the counties that have median housing price neighborhoods, are Prince George's County and Baltimore County. Those two. A really easy way to determine what those neighborhoods are or what those areas are is go to like auction.com and follow where the majority of the auction sales are, or where a lot of the foreclosure sales are. And you can follow trends that way. Most of the foreclosures in the state of Maryland are in those two counties. And you can kind of follow, and if there's a lot of foreclosures, that chances are there's a lot of opportunities for investors to go buy stuff at a discount. And again, there's opportunities in all properties and in all counties and in all price points. I mean, we've bought and lent on $10,000, $20,000 properties or $20,000 loan amounts or purchase prices. I'm not saying they're worth $20,000 afterwards. Our average loan amount is still $150,000, $160,000. That's in D.C. suburbs, that's in Baltimore, that's in Philly as well. It's about $150,000, $160,000 loan amount, meaning that those values are about $275,000 or so. So The first is stay at median price neighborhoods, at least in my opinion, and related to the areas, you know, follow foreclosure trends on that. And also what I've seen is the experienced builders, developers, investors that really are experts in those particular neighborhoods are the ones that are making all the money, because they can pay the same price as anyone. Like, they're not, they don't have to buy super discounted properties. Like, they'll pay retail, you know, like I call investor retail. So they're paying the best price they can possibly pay, but their quality of renovations and their experience of how exactly you have to renovate the house, exactly the size of the bedrooms, closets, you know, appliance package, paint, molding, everything is to a T, because they've done so many deals there that they sell for higher than everybody else. They sell higher than I do, and we do a lot of deals, but I'm not the master expert flipper in some of these neighborhoods. They live in those neighborhoods. They know exactly what to do. If you're a newer investor, you cannot try to compete with an experienced investor that knows exactly what they're doing. It's not going to work. Their construction costs are less than you. Their reputation is better than you. They can pay the exact same price as you can pay on the house, and they will make significantly more. And chances are, you know, the price they're paying, you can't even pay at that price, because even if you bought it at that price, you probably wouldn't make money on that deal. They're making money because they have cheaper construction costs and they're selling a better product than you can put out. And I'm not saying that you eventually can't compete with that, but it's just really something to think about. You know, if you take this to underwriting loans and we evaluate properties, I have so many newer borrowers that come to us and say, this property's worth 200 grand. And I'll say, it is worth 200 grand if this developer right here fully executes their product on it. I'm not saying that you can't sell for this price, but you just haven't been through it yet. You don't know exactly the quality of renovations that this neighborhood entails for you to sell it at that price point. So I think that's a thing that a lot of newer investors kind of need to not necessarily like worry too much about, but like it needs to be in the top of their head. Make sure you kind of know your level of execution and how well you can perform on a deal before you kind of dig into it.
Yeah, that is a great point, especially for someone who hasn't experienced that yet, because you do see people put out fantastic product and they get it done at a fantastic price for the level of, you know, design that goes into it. We see in the Chicago market, there's certain neighborhoods and these properties probably sell around $175,000 to $185,000. They're cash sale on the other side. You're buying them for like $30,000, $35,000, $25,000, maybe $45,000. They're probably spending $60,000 to $70,000 to get them done. And, you know, one of the things you have to do is put a full bathroom, finished basement, because we have a lot of buyers who basically have extended families who are living in the basement, and they pretty much put like a kitchenette and treat them like illegal duplexes here in Chicago, and then have like two yep. families living in the household. This is just, you have to know that. But if you were an out of town person and you thought, oh, I could just, you know, put this all together and not quite, you know, you really got to spend some money on those basements, and they got to look right in order to get, you know, the 175, 185 high-end, high-watermark comp. And I'll tell you what else, Jason. Yeah. The other thing I learned over the past 12 months or so, maybe a little longer, because I've been flipping properties, I also wholesale properties, and I've been on the selling side of the equation for a long number of years as a real estate investor myself, and I'm learning that not all real estate agents are created equally. And, you know, some of these developers that I know personally who have the quality of renovation piece mastered also have an agent that performs above average as well. So the pricing of the house initially is, you know, just a little lower maybe than they want to sell it, and they're able to entice the bidding wars and get these properties sold in 7 to 10 days, especially in this kind of market. Whereas somebody who's newer, less experienced and shooting for the moon may overprice the property and sit there for 30, 40 days. Their listing goes stale. So it's, you know, along with a million other things I'm not capable of speaking to on how a good agent, you know, gets a property sold at maybe a 4 or 5% above the average sale price for similar condition properties in that neighborhood. So that was just kind of the other piece I wanted to share, was the actual sell
yeah.
and the person who's experienced on the agency side.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there anything over the last year, 2 years, a strategy, a single idea, some system that you've kind of put in place in your business, whether that's, you know, on the investment side or whether that's the hard money banker side, where you guys experienced exponential growth or maybe like just outstanding results from putting that into practice?
Yeah, so a big thing that I think a lot of entrepreneurs and real estate investors fall into the trap of, you know, entrepreneur ADD and trying to have their hands involved in everything instead of trying to be a master of one thing. I know so many, and everyone, 90% of the investors fall into this trap. Like, all of a sudden, they'll be flipping a few properties and they'll kind of put it, not on autopilot, but like they make good money and they're in a good spot. And they're like, cool, I want to start doing this now. I want to start doing this now. I want to start doing this now. And then they start doing that and they don't realize that their core business, let's call it, starts suffering. So now I'm buying rentals. Now maybe I'm lending some money. Now I'm coaching. That's another kind of extension of a lot of people's businesses. And then they start working on that and they devote a lot of time and energy to that. And then all of a sudden their core business that's making them all the money and is a, it's a well-oiled machine, starts running into trouble. And they don't realize that. Like, we've really, really, really been hyper-focused on what we do and how we do it. And we've got a lot of room for growth. And it's slow and steady, you know. Like I said, this stuff doesn't happen overnight. But instead of trying to go out there and, oh, let's do coaching, let's do this. I mean, believe me, we've had, you know, the carrot dangled in front of us of other opportunities. And a lot of them we've tried to bite and try to move into some different spaces and some different opportunities. But we've really learned to be hyper-focused on exactly what we do and just keep growing it and growing it and growing it. You know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, if you can do something, you know, once, you can do something 10 times and 100 times and 1,000 times and 1,000,000 times, you might as well just keep replicating it over and over and over. So instead of trying to do all these things, stick to what's currently working and just keep growing it. And that's what we've been doing with Hard Money Bankers.
Well said. I'm guilty of, you know, now we're going to do the seminars. Now we're going to try out the coaching. Now we're going to try a new construction, which I never did actually get one out of the ground. Now we're going to, you know, obviously I'm holding rentals because we're real estate investors and real estate investor has to hold rentals, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're all guilty. I'm guilty as well. You know, we flipped a bunch of, you know, in 2013, we went out and flipped a ton of houses. 2014, I was like, this is okay. A mess. And then we stopped flipping houses. I bought rentals. Then we were like, I don't want to hold rentals. I want to sell my rentals. So it's a learning experience. I mean, we're all guilty of it. It's just, and I think sometimes you have to go through that because obviously, you know, you look at this, you look down the road and you look at this path and then you're like, oh yeah, this path is going to be smooth. We're just going to go this way. And then all of a sudden, like in reality, your path is swerving and there's speed bumps and there's a lot of things and it's not as easy as you think. So I feel like we all have been on that path. And then, you know, you teach yourself. And you learn the lesson to, okay, let's bring this back to what I'm good at.
It's so ironic. I remember I felt like I had a missed opportunity. So, you know, I got in 2006. By 2010, I was at a place where I was like looking back at all the, you know, 100 or so deals I had done over the last 4 years, and many of them were assignments. And I'm sitting there, you know, all but bankrupt at the time, and I'm like, oh man, if I would have just flipped all those houses instead of wholesaling them out, I'd be okay now today. But it was kind of like a fallacy. It was like a, you know, a mind trick, because along the way I had to do a lot of work, Jason. I had to hustle, I had to grind, I had to make a lot of phone calls, and there really wouldn't have been the additional bandwidth. It would have been a completely different business model to go out and flip all of those houses. It was not just like it was this easy thing looking back. And I feel like, you know, some of that entrepreneurial ADD that you speak of is, you know, not looking back over it, but looking forward over it. Like, oh yeah, well, if I'm going to just, you know, I'll just build a new construction, I'll be like Toll Brothers and just be this fantastic quick thing where we're building hundreds of houses. You know, oh, we're going to just flip houses and we'll flip a ton of them. But, you know, there's a lot of work involved no matter which one of those pathways, a lot of risk for the reward that you see. You know, we minimize the risk up front and the time commitment. Great point. Absolutely great point. So, Jason, to you, who is the most successful real estate investor or developer, and why do you believe they are successful?
The person, or just like hypothetical?
However you want to answer the questions, cool with me.
I don't know anyone individually that I believe is. You know, success is whatever you make it to. It can be financial. It can be, you know, freedom, doing what you want to do when you want to do it. I mean, and hopefully this answers this question the way that I state it. So a buddy of mine who I'm in a mastermind group with, he's in our market. He does a lot of flips. And I'll never forget him saying, and I strongly believe this. He was like, we were talking about, I don't know, doing, everyone wanted to do more and more deals. And I've never been a big advocate of doing more and more deals. I'd rather just do better deals and be more profitable on them. And he was like, I don't remember what his bottom line number was, hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe $1 million that he tries to bring in every year. And he was like, all I want to do is one deal. I just want to do one deal. I make the money I want, and I'm completely out, and I only have to do one deal a year. And it wasn't all that realistic that he could accomplish everything on one deal. He has to do dozens and dozens of deals a year, like typical everybody does. But the point of it is, success to me is I just need to make financially this amount of money, and you know, this is as many hours as I want to work a week. When I accomplish that, I'm good. Every year I try to do a smaller amount of deals, and I try to make a bigger margin on each one of those deals, a bigger margin financially and less work on per transaction. So I don't know if the question was best or most successful, but kind of figuring out, you know, in order to set up a goal, you need to work backwards, right? You need to figure out kind of what the end game is and then work backwards to that. But whatever the end game is, if it's this much money, this much time, this much, you got to mold your day, you got to mold your week, you got to mold your month, you got to mold your year, maybe even mold your life into whatever that goal is, and then that will turn into success of, cool, this is how much money I need to make in order to make this much money, this is what I need to do, this is how much time I need to spend. And, you know, if you can kind of master that game, which takes some time to do, but eventually you master it, then to me, you are the best, most successful investor.
Yeah, I like that answer. You know? I remember, you know, when I was younger, 26, 27, it was kind of more about the money. It was a dollar amount. It was, you know, oh, man, if I could just make 20, 30 grand a month or whatever the number was back then. At the time in 2006, my daughter lived in Chicago. I lived in Philadelphia. That's where I started, was in Philadelphia. And I was in Philadelphia and she was in Chicago up until about 2000, end of 2014. So when I finally built a business around me in Philadelphia, I was blessed to have some fantastic partners just kind of come out of the world and come into my life. It seemed like really a gift from God at the time, and it was. And I remember I moved to Chicago in 2015 in January so that I could be near my daughter. And right around that same time, I knew I was going to make the move, and this was like the biggest thing, the scariest thing I was ever going to do, because to me it was like I'm going to move to Chicago and then everything in Philadelphia would go to shit. And instead, there were houses in Chicago and it was cold in Chicago, so I started doing Florida and I learned how to enter new real estate markets at the same time. Even looking back at that moment, you know, when I finally moved out here and I could see like the look on my daughter's face, she was like, you know, 13, I think, at the time, when she came in and, you know, saw the condo for the first time. And, you know, we like live on the water out here on Lake Michigan, and it was just like, I feel like that was it. Like I kind of like reached success at that point. This was like everything I ever wanted, was to live in Chicago and just be like near my daughter. And then for me, this, you know, the idea of success or why I wake up and hustle every day changed from I got to get out there to Chicago. All of a sudden I looked around and I was like, I'm here now, to I have great business partners in every one of these markets that I work in. And for me, it's like to continue building the opportunity and growing the opportunity and single-mindedly doing what we're doing, keeping the focus on growing this so that like every one of my partners can now reach what, you know, their new levels of success in life are kind of like defined as. So it's definitely transformed for myself. And I know that the answer to that question, I guess, you know, all of a sudden becomes more like how am I defining success, if I was just to answer it right there, rather than, you know, oh, it's Donald Trump. You know, we get to that point in time, that would have been my answer for a long time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's everybody individually, what they want out of it. I mean, I know a lot of people that flip a few houses. You know, they work their full-time job and they like their full-time job. And, you know, they work that full-time job because they like it. You know, they might not make – they obviously, most people wish they made more money, but they enjoy it. They're challenged. They like it. Then they flip a few properties to supplement that income. And they have a good gig. You know, they get –
Nice.
You know, there's not many people out there when you say, well, what are you going to – you know, what's your end goal? You know, I've done a lot of these interviews as well with, you know, successful people. And I ask the same question all the time to people. I say, you know, what's your end goal? Are you this, like, when I'm out, like, throw my cell phone away, go to a beach and just sit there and don't do anything for the rest of my life? Or is I'm going to continue to work? And a lot of people, and most, not a lot, every single one of them are like, I hate going to the beach and just sitting there doing nothing. Like, I want to keep myself challenged. So, again, you know, like you're saying, success is determined on, you know, what the individual person wants out of it.
Absolutely. So, Jason, are there two or three books that you have recommended to people most often?
Yes, there are. So there's a book probably read about a year ago. It's The Life Story of Warren Buffett. It's called The Snowball. It's one of my favorite books. The problem with it,
nice,
is it's either like a 40-hour audiobook or I don't even know if
I did it on Audible. It was 40 hours to listen to, and it took, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 months, but it was well worth it. That's always a huge recommendation. You know, just think about the term snowball. It's one of the kind of terms that my business partner and I talk about every day, and we, you know, it's probably one of the most important things to us. So think about the term snowball. You know, you start a snowball, think about like the knowledge you have in your real estate industry, or think about, you know, the money you have in your savings account, and, you know, grab some snow, pack it together. You have a snowball, right? You can throw it. It's small. You can touch it, but it's not all that sexy besides just a little snowball. Now, you know, bring that snowball to the top of a hill and push it down, and it grows and it grows and it grows. You learn more. Your assets are growing. Your wisdom is growing. Everything's growing, growing, growing. And all of a sudden, it gets to the point that it's halfway down the mountain, and it's growing so big, it's out of control. Whatever's in its way, it'll continue to push over. And you can't stop it from growing. It's so big. So think about different things inside your business or your life that you could compare to a snowball. And we think about it all the time. You know, we think about that compared to how big our email list is or how big some of our marketing funnels are and things like that, that over time they grow and grow and grow and grow. And you don't have to, and after they're like up and running, you don't have to do much heavy lifting on them. You just kind of keep it consistent. So after 40 hours of listening, that was the big thing I got out of that book. Some other books that I really like The Richest Man of Babylon and stuff that compares, you know, real life to personal finance. One big, I don't know if I got this quote out of The Richest Man of Babylon, but it's one that I always, whenever I reread that, because that's a short read, I think that's only like a 2-hour audiobook or something, a short read, a few hour audiobook that I always think about is paying yourself first. So we always think about it, like think about this with personal finance. You know, let's say you get a paycheck, and it doesn't matter if you get a paycheck from a full-time government job or a bartending job, doesn't matter where you were, or if you get an income from flipping a house. So what happens when we get money? So we get our money, we pay our bills, we buy something that we want, we spend it, and then it's like, oh, cool, I got a few extra $100 left over. I'm going to put it into an asset. I'm going to put it in my savings account. I'm going to save it. I'm going to do whatever with it, invest it. The mindset is like complete opposite. It should be complete different. It's first off, figure out how much money you want to save or invest first. When you get paid, that money needs to go there first. In essence, you're paying yourself first, and the rest of the money can get paid, your house payment, your car payment, or whatever the case is. Like, why should your car payment get paid before you get paid? So it's kind of a mixed up theory that I think a lot of people have backwards that I've, you know, pretty passionate about. And obviously, you know, we're not talking about, you know, you know, being better at debt and, you know, finance, but I'm just saying in general, just kind of, you know, part of that book gave me a good mindset of, you pay yourself first, you pay others second.
Absolutely. Well said. So, Jason, if you could go back and share with your, I don't know, 18 or 20-year-old self the crown jewel of wisdom, what would that be?
Stick to your wheelhouse. Stick to, you know, whatever your wheelhouse is, stick to it. If, you know, after you kind of get over the education hurdle of learning what part of this business you want to be in, after you're in it, just stick to it and ramp it up as big as possible or as big as you can get it to. There's no need to steer into seeing shiny objects and staring in that direction. Just stick to what you know and stick to what you like. So either you're successful and you don't like it, or you're not successful but you like it. Whichever one that, you know, you got to mold those together. You got to like what you're doing and then turn it into, you know, mold it to becoming successful in that. We all know that wholesaling works. We all know that flipping works. We all know that rentals work. We all know that lending works. We all know that investing in commercial properties works. We all know that all of that stuff works. It's proven no matter what market we're in, it works. So anybody can be successful in any of that. Pick which one works for you the best and exploit it.
Jason, I know you put out a lot of great content and information. What can people do, listeners, if they want to get in touch with you or check you out?
Yeah, absolutely. So hardmoneybankers.com is typically the best thing. Private real estate lending. Typically, we just focus in Maryland, Virginia, D.C., Pennsylvania, New Jersey, those 5 key states. But we do a lot of stuff nationwide. My partner and I wrote a book called The Whiteboard. It's on Amazon. We're very passionate about not just real estate, but also just business, entrepreneurship, personal finance, marketing, and stuff like that. So, you know, even if we aren't in an area that you need a loan in, you know, we like having followings, we like having collaborators, and all of us kind of collectively can grow together. So it's a powerful thing. So hardmoneybankers.com,
is the best URL for us.
Got it. Is there somewhere people can sign up for an email list there or something like that, Jason?
Yeah, there's 16 opt-ins on that website. between free videos and newsletters and free reports and free deal analyzers, we have nothing to sell either. It's always, to us, there's value in just, having loyal audiences and big audiences because, eventually, hopefully we can do it alone together. So, at one point, or maybe somebody we can do a loan for. So, yeah, just email addresses. Won't ask you to ever buy anything.
Yeah, and I'm the same way. I appreciate that philosophy there, Jason. Ian's the same way. Ian also had an episode with us here on the REI Diamond Show. I'll make sure I include his episode if anyone wants to check out the Philly version. And also, we talked about valuing property as well from the hard money banker's perspective. Yeah, not selling a bunch of stuff. Our REI Diamond Show listeners, I've done a countless number of deals, whether I bought the deals directly, whether somebody in the audience bought a deal for me. So really, that's the reason why we put the show on. It's cool to see people come on the show who are like-minded. So I really appreciate that. Cool,
yeah,
Jason.
Totally.
We're at the finish line here. I really appreciate you coming on the show. I enjoyed talking about some of the areas where we would focus, some of the things, how we could get started, and just avoiding the entrepreneurial ADD. So I got a lot of value out of it myself. I'm sure the listeners did too. So thank you for taking time out of your day to come on the show.
Thank you, Dan. I certainly appreciate it.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. Are you interested in receiving a notification when I release the next episode? You can either sign up for email at www.reidiamonds.com or subscribe through one of the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. If you are interested in selling a deal to me, visit www.reidiamonds.com and click the link at the top of the page. I am currently looking for deals in Philadelphia tri-state area, the Baltimore, Maryland, D.C. market, the Chicagoland region and the Collier counties, the Atlanta region, and the Tampa Bay area in Florida. Finally, do you know anyone else who might enjoy this episode? I'd appreciate the referrals, and I'm sure they'd love the information. Last but not least, I appreciate you, too, my loyal REI Diamond Show listener. Dan Breslin here. Catch you later.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.